Hello and welcome to another episode, exciting episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And I thought I'd delve into some questions. And a lot of these are supplied by my friend Nick Wetmore. And one of them I may have already answered, but I'm gonna try it answer it again if I haven't. And then the other ones I'm positive I didn't answer. And some of them are for other podcasts, but I'm going to answer them here in case I forget to do them on another podcast. So he said for weekly reads question, when you take a break, does it wig you out that your to read list is going to hit a year behind mark? And he said he's that way with Comixology to read purchases. No. It doesn't bother me that I have several years worth of comics that I haven't read. So let's say I have 70,000 comics. There's probably 20,000 I haven't read. So that's more than a year's worth of comics I haven't read. So I guess it doesn't get me upset. Not at all. Sometimes I get upset when I'm actually not like. When I'm the only time I ever get like a little anxiety because I have too much is when I go and I have to sort an unread box. Not necessarily sort an unread box, but merge an unread box when there's boxes and boxes of unread read issues. But I'm a collector too, so it doesn't bother me as much as you do, 'cause when you're collecting digital, that's not really collecting. That's so you can read it or reread it. Collecting means I guess you can collect digital, but there's no value in collecting it, whereas there is value in collecting a collectible, regardless of whether it be records or something. You're collecting it because you're hoping that someday you can get rid of it for some kind of value. And yeah, you're probably thinking, well, a lot of comics probably you can't sell, but you could sell a lot of full runs and stuff. And anything that was, I would say, 80s or below is easy to sell fairly much. Everything beyond that is subject to whatever it is. Or whatever's hot. But it is collectible, whether it's collecting a cover to a comic or collecting the material inside the comic or what. And does a library get stressed out when they get more books in that they haven't read? Nah. Well, I'm a library of Mike. So I hope that answers your question. But sometimes it does give me anxiety, and it actually happened like maybe I was like 10 years ago. Yeah, it might have been about 10 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, when I was going through a box of like DC unread books, and I was like, "This has got to stop. I'm getting every single DC title, and I can't keep up, and there's no way I can keep up because work." Kills me. I work 10 hours. I get home. I'm too damn tired to function. I can decompress maybe with the TV show, and then at night when I wake up stressed out or have an anxiety thing, I read myself to sleep. So I'll read like one or two comics a night, and then Saturday is my like really really big reading night. Like this weekend, I didn't read anything. I read some on what we went to Arizona for the weekend, and it was fantastic because the weather was like 70 degrees and it wasn't too hot. I hadn't been to Arizona during this time of year, and we went to a Hawaiian festival and I ate like a pig, ate a lot of Hawaiian food and had a good time listening to Hawaiian music and saw a lot of Hawaiian dancing. And then the next day was Renaissance Festival, which I hung out with a bunch of wenches, and that was a lot of fun. There was a lot of different shows that we saw, and you can get meat on a stick, and I don't know, it was a great time. It was, even though it was a short weekend, it was a very productive weekend of entertainment. But I didn't read anything except on the flight back, I started reading a bunch of Batman Adventures that I had that I don't actually own, but I own it in a trade. So I bought volume 1 and volume 2 physical of Batman Adventures, and I'm on volume 2. And there are a bunch of like done in one stories. Because they're done in one, they're kind of forgettable, and they're on average. This is based on the adventure line is more like of a kids line, all ages, but in the vein of like something that you'd see in an animated cartoon. There was one story that was really interesting, though. It bothered me because of the betrayal of Deadman, and I love Deadman, those of you that know me. It was interesting in the way they told it, but it was Robin going back, Dick Grayson going back and working with the circus, the Haley Circus. And there was something going on there where somebody was trying to get to kill Deadman, which Deadman at this point in time wasn't really Deadman. He was the aerialist Deadman, but he wasn't dead yet. And it was kind of interesting because they portray he. If you read early Deadman, he's kind of an asshole. Like he thinks very highly of himself. He's brash. He's kind of a womanizer. He's kind of a dick. But when he dies, he turns very different because he wants redemption. But in this one, he's kind of an asshole. And he even treats Dick Grayson like an asshole because the owners of the circus, they want Dick Grayson back to bring money back. So they actually try to set up some shenanigans, and they get arrested for these shenanigans because it risks people's lives. And it was all to get Dick Grayson to come back to the circus and get rid of Boston Brand. And then his brother, he's got a twin brother named Cleveland. So when I was reading this, I was like, get it, Cleveland and Boston. But you get to think, is this the other guy or what is going on? Because it's so out of continuity, but that's the way these stories are. But it's really, really cool story. And these done in ones, they're fun. You get like one of them was the intro to Mad Hatter in this world, in this animated world, and his love for Alice. And there was a lot of different stories. One was a Man Bat. I don't think there was a Joker. There wasn't a Riddler. There was an one with a villain called Dagger that I've never seen before, and it was kind of like a prison story about he was teaching another prison why it's not good to do crime. That one was sort of interesting. But I don't know how I got off in that tangent. Nick Wetmore always asks, and this was for the DC pod, but I'll save it for the DC pod because it's specifically about a DC character, and he says it's for the DC pod. So I'm going to save it for the next DC Mike M's DC Spotlight. And maybe that's a character I'll spotlight. His question is involving Flash, and he knows that that Flash is my favorite DC character. He wants to know a little bit more about that. So if you don't know this already, I started a podcast called DC Monthly Spotlight. I've already released two. The format is very much like this format, very loose, just me babbling. But it was character focused on that first month, and I focused a lot on Superman. 70s, 80s-ish Superman. There was some Steel in there and some Superboy, but very much in the Superman realm. So if you want to listen to those and you enjoy this show, go to dcnoisepodcast.com. And you can subscribe to that there, or you can go to iTunes under DC Noise Podcast, subscribe to it, and get that new podcast. So here's a weekly reads question. When you take a break, oh no, that one I've already answered. And this one is for retro. I think what happened with retro is I asked for some retro questions, and this one came after we started recording, and I never got back to it towards the end of the podcast. But here's a question for the Retro Rascals, and I'm going to answer it here, but I'll if I remember on the next retro, I will send it. I want to answer it here because I don't like what he said here. I've been hearing you poo-poo annuals. I know poo-poo annuals. I never said they were no good. I said I didn't buy them because for a long time I was like, these stories aren't in continuity yet. They're not important to the universe. I don't care. And I wasn't all in at the time. So I didn't buy a lot of annuals. But since then, I've in my collection, since I'm trying to get every DC comic since 1970, I've been filling in a lot of annuals, and the ones that I've read have been very, very good, and I'm enjoying a lot of annuals. So I'm not necessarily poo-pooing them. I just didn't buy them at the time. Everybody has reasons for not buying something, and an annual for one thing was cost more. It usually what now it's hard because they're in Rebirth and in New 52, a lot of the annuals are in continuity, and in order to finish the story, you have to get the annual. But there's no set rhyme or reason for annuals these days. Before it used to be like an event, you'd have Marvel Atlantis Attacks or some kind of themed Elseworlds or Dead Earth or something in the DC universe. I remember there was one centered around the High Evolutionary. I can't remember what it's called, Evolutionary War. And I got some of them, and even at the time, there were these annuals events like Armageddon 2001. Oh, I love that annual event. It was amazing. That's where they made Hawk a villain. But it was supposed to be Captain Atom. So there's a lot of annuals that I really did enjoy. It's just that a lot of them I would only get like Batman annual or certain annuals that I thought I'd like, or I wouldn't get any of them. And my whole attitude towards them changed over time. Yeah, the one off, he says, are the one-off stories attractive now? Yeah, I'm not as ingrained in continuity anymore. Like I love continuity, and to me these annuals are in continuity unless they say Elseworld or Dead Earth or some futuristic story. But most of them are in continuity, so they do matter, and even the individual stories, they do matter. They just came out with a Gotham by Gaslight cartoon I still need to watch. I know you love the annuals and you talk about Atlantis Attacks a lot. So yeah, those are good. You know what? I don't think I ever read Atlantis Attacks. I think I've read pieces of it. Like if I was getting Spider-Man or whatever was in that particular event. If there was a tie-in, I got a few of them. I just it wasn't all in. And back in the day, you didn't have to be. There was a little bit more, you could jump in at any time kind of thing. And you notice the difference. If you pick up a comic book 80s or prior, you could pretty much pick it up at any time and then find your way through it. In today's world, it's a lot harder, and if you read a large quantity, it's hard to remember. So I like what Marvel does, especially the way that I read, where I'll read like a bunch of an issue and then I'll not come back to it for another year, and I can read that front page and then say, oh yeah, I remember that. That's pretty cool. And the other thing I wanted to say is I've been enjoying my Marvel Unlimited. I think it's a fantastic it's even hard to buy like Marvel. Like they had a 99-cent sale and I was like, man, I already have access to 85% of these things on Marvel Unlimited. So I think I'm just gonna just stick it out. I have so much to read on Marvel Unlimited that I don't need to go buy more stuff on Comixology. But one thing that they did have on Marvel Unlimited is they had the Nom. And let's see, what do I own on the Nom? I have never read the Nom, but I did buy a bundle back, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago. And I may have read one issue, but then I never got around to it. The Nom. There's the Nom magazine. Wow, I didn't know they had a Nom magazine. I don't see the Nom. Oh, the Nom Tales. That's not even, that's weird. Why didn't it have it? If I, it's, it could be that special, character in, that little tick mark that's in there, it throws off the search engine in the database. So what I'm gonna do, I'm in Comic Base right now, and I'm gonna try to find it just based on find title name. This one's gonna be a long one because I'm looking for NAM. And this is entertaining radio. The Nom. So it is there, it's just in a weird order. So I jumped to it, and it ran from 1986 to 1993. Almost the time that Sergeant Rock and G.I. Combat ended. It was around the same time as G.I. Joe, though. This one ran 84 issues. And what I heard from the podcast is there's like 85, 86, 87. 87, it goes to, there's 84 physical issues, but 85, 86, and 87 or something like that is collected in a trade and involves the Punisher. But it's not in its single issue. At least that's what I learned on the podcast. So I've been reading this, and one thing I'm shocked about doing is it seems so real. It's so bizarre. It opens up with this one naive soldier that has to go to Vietnam. And this soldier, he's naive to everything. He's kind of like the guy that doesn't even really know what he's fighting for, it seems like. But he gets there, and one of the first things does is he goes to see his commander that's in charge of that particular base. And that guy's corrupt. And it doesn't go out of its way to tell you how, you know, these people are heroes. There's corrupt people fighting in this war. And this guy asks him up front, you know, you're gonna give me some money or what, you know, and I'll keep you protected. Like, in other words, you won't have to go out on all these deadly missions that you could die. But the kid's so naive, he doesn't realize what he's asking for because he's real subtle in the way he asks it. And he doesn't know how to answer the question, so he sticks him with the sergeant and stuff that go out on a lot of missions, and he sees action almost immediately. And there's a lot of crazy stuff in it. Like this guy gets involved with getting media over there to record stuff, And he says, "Oh, this is going to be like a milk run. It's going to be easy. We're just going to go into the town and we're going to film some stuff with this guy and then leave." And this is the corrupt dude. So he flies a bunch of copters into this small town. And there's some Viet Cong anti-aircraft guns. And they're just blasting the shit out of them. So they almost knock a bunch of them out of the sky. So that didn't turn out well. And then on one, they have like, where they have those little leaves, like I think they're called KP or something like that. I don't know the military term for when you get like to go to Saigon or whatever. And they do get to go on one of those trips, but it's a nightmare, man. It's they freaking are like excited, like we're gonna get a. Th they actually had to bribe the commander to actually go out. They collected everybody's money and said, "Oh, let's just get a break so we could get a nice clean bed for a night. We can go drinking. We could have a good old time on the streets." And three of them go out, and it turns into a freaking nightmare. Let's see. I'm trying to think of what the first thing they do. The f first thing they do is they go to the movies. So they're just gonna watch like a martial arts film. And there's a terrorist act in the movie theater. Blows the whole shit out of the movie theater. And so they leave as soon as they can. They get out of there. They didn't get injured from this incident. And then they end up going to a bar. And our main character, the one that's really naive, he gets there's a bunch of girls there. They talk to him, you know. They're at the bar. They're dancers more than strippers. It doesn't seem like a strip club. But they're trying to keep that guy close to him. And this girl, one of the girls asks, "Why don't I take you outside for a bit and go for a walk?" Well, the naive guy says, "Okay, let's go for a walk." So they go on walking, and they turn down an alley, and one of the first things happens is they clock him on the head and knock him out. But lucky for him, his buddies said, "Man, this guy, he's never gotten laid. He doesn't know what the fuck is going on, so we're gonna watch out for him." And good thing they did, 'cause they might have killed him and robbed him, 'cause he did get clocked on the head. But they save him, and then they're like, "Oh God, it's been one hell of a night. You know, we tried to have a good time at the bar. We tried to have a good time at the movies. This is nice. Let's just get some good sleep." So they try to go get some sleep at a hotel room, and shit, they another terrorist act. They blow the fuck out of that hotel room, and one of them really gets injured. Like they have to fly him home from Vietnam, and the other two go back to their. But what a fucking disaster to ask for one thing. You paid for all of this with all the money that you could spare just to bribe the guy so you could, you know, go out on this little vacation, and then it turns into this hellish nightmare. But the other thing that I found out is, and as I'm reading this, I'm like on issue 4 or 5. I think I'm on issue 5. And I, by the way, I only own 1 through like 19. Then I have one couple of random issues. So yeah, I need to fill this, and I probably will fill it at some point, like when I get to those issues after I'm reading them. And Marvel Unlimited doesn't have the full run. I think they have about as much as I have. But I notice like every Monday they fill in something that I'm almost reading. Like I was reading Sensational She-Hulk, and they started filling in more of that. They started filling in more Punisher. So if you're patient, they start filling in a lot of those holes that they're missing. But I think that's all I have for tonight. And I will I don't know if I'm going to have enough time to record the rest, but I might come back and record the weekly reads and then just get this episode out, but I may not. It depends if I think I can get done in 15 minutes or not before Barb gets here and starts laughing at my ass. And let's see if I got any last minute questions. He's asking how did he convince two different people to play plunge and read and draw Atari Force. He knows I love Atari Force. A matter of fact, I have a commission being done right now, and literally, the pencils were done about a week and a half ago, and now he sent me another update that he got some fills in for his ink pen, and he started inking it. But it is of the entire well, the majority of the team of Atari Force, and it looks amazing. It's from Zach Bassett, who has done my Defenders. He's done my Watchmen one, which is fucking amazing. That is what I that's the only one that I designed. I said I want one side to be the Watchmen, and then at the middle part I want it to be divided, so like the quest it's the character is split in half, and I believe I had the Question and Rorschach split in half. So on one side it's Rorschach, and on one other side it's Question. And then as it goes out on each side of the paper, it'll have like the corresponding character, like Comedian and Peacemaker, in a similar pose. So I love that commission. But Zach is somebody I met at a couple of conventions. He was always with Cosmic Times, and I always started to get commissions, and I would get several commissions, and now I just every time I freeze up from doing some kind of comic work or has some extra time, I'll say, "Hey, I'd like to pay you for a commission," and I just hooked up with an Atari Force commission. Let me see if I have another. This one's from Ronnie. He said, "I know comics are sentimental to you. Is there one comic book or a few that are sentimental for personal reasons, though? For example, the one was gifted to you, signed by a creator, a pastor, or anything like that." I don't think I have like any kind of like personal attachments to something that's signed. I don't have many comics that are signed. Matter of fact, I'm not into signed comics. I don't want signatures desecrating my book, but that's just me. If I have an extra, then maybe. Or if it's somebody like that's huge, but I don't necessarily take books to get signed. Do I have anything that's sentimental personal reasons? Well, Magnus Robot Fighter number 12, which I talked about on Retrocast or some of the others, but that was the one that my wife bought me in college, and it's the first Turok. And that does have sentimental value because at the time I was trying to complete my Valiant run, and it was the only Valiant comic I didn't have. And it was hot on the Wizard item list, and the book was over $100. And the internet wasn't real prominent at the time, and my wife took her hard-earned money and she bought me that book. So that one will always have like some sentimental value to me. A lot of the books that have sentimental value to me, I don't own the original copy anymore because I traded them. Because when I was young, that's how I read many, many, many comics. I think two giant size ones that had a lot that I read and they have sentimental value to me is the Superman versus Flash Treasury Edition. It's called, I believe, to get it, Treasuries were Marvel. DC Collector's Editions were DC. And the other one was the Muhammad Ali versus Superman. Those ones have some sentimental value to me. The Defenders book has sentimental value to me just because I think it's freaking amazing. And it was one of the first titles that I actually sought out in back issues just to fill everything in. A lot of the flashes that meant a lot to me, I've since picked up again, but I traded away when I was a kid. So, I have a piece of art that's pretty sentimental to me. I have several of them, but one of them was a page that I got from Tom Beland, who wrote True Story Swear to God. And this was before I became a big podcaster, but I started with Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise, and from there, I believe before Geek Brunch started, I did a podcast with Derek Howard and Tim Terrell, who used to do the Thume podcast. And in this podcast, Timmy Thume sent us issues of stuff he wanted us to review. So we all had copies of three books, and one of them was True Story Swear to God, which is a autobiographical story from Tom Beland. And we did this podcast, and it was pretty amazing, and we love this book. Like, all three of us were raving about it. And Derek posted this, and I don't even remember what it's titled. But the thing came out, and somehow, I don't know how, Tom Beland listened to the podcast, and he came on, and we got to interview him, and it was probably like the mo like I'm not big into interviews for one thing, but this was something special because he reached out to us and said, "I'd like to talk to you guys," and we had a great time talking to him. And that podcast, like, meant a lot to him. Like, it what we raved about and stuff, and the excitement we expressed and the feelings that we had for it, they came across in the podcast, and it really meant a lot to him. So when he was on, he said, "I can't thank you guys enough," because sometimes he gets depressed and stuff, and our podcast raised his spirits. And that year, God, I can't remember if it was 2006. Might have been 2006, might have been 2007. I know it was close to when I started podcasting, and I've been podcasting since 2006. So, but anyway, that year I went to San Diego Comic-Con, and me and Barb were talking to him at the table. And yeah, Barb says, he's Mike is the one that you interviewed, and he gave me a page out of his portfolio. So that was really, really, really cool. And I've pushed, like, True Story, Swear to God. Like, I haven't re pushed it lately, but I bought like six copies of the archive that came out of Image, and I gave copies to a lot of my friends just because I wanted people to read this thing. 'Cause it's pretty freaking amazing. Now, if you know how it ends in reality, it's kind of depressing because he's no longer with Lily, and the magic that, falling in love with his wife, or what was his wife, Lily, and Disney World, and then changing his life and moving to Puerto Rico with Lily and being with her. And learning about the trials and tribulations of everything they've went through, and then to know personally that they're no longer together—it's really, really sad. 'Cause he's back where his family used to live, in Napa, I believe, Napa Valley, somewhere near Napa in California, where the wine was, where they've had those fires actually. And she's still in Puerto Rico, and what happened to the she's fine and everything, but they were devastated. So yeah, it's crazy. So if you get a chance, check out True Story Swear to God. I think you'll I know Ronnie, I know you'll like it. It might not be for Martin, but I know you'll like it 'cause it's slice of life, but it's really, really well told. So, on that note, I'm going to end this, and then I don't think I'm going to have to finish this on some other, because I'm already like 34 minutes, and usually I try to keep it at 15 minutes. I'd like to keep everything like to 40 minutes on a MicEmms, but this is going to be like an hour after I'm done with it. But thank you all. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you for the questions. One of them I'll put off to another. Oh, Kirk. Thank you, Kirk Spencer, for the comment on Atari Force. You see how you ask something and I just go off on a tangent and I turn it into something else? I'm like, oh, I'm getting a piece of art done by Atari Force. That's just the way I roll, man. One of the other things I'm excited about, well, there's two things I'm excited about. I'm excited that Plastic Man's going to have his own series. I love Plastic Man. And every time I get a chance at a con, I'll buy a Golden Age Plastic Man. But I own everything that he's been in solo issues and such from Silver Age on. And any series that he has, I own. I actually love him. They do some crazy stuff with him. Like sometimes it's a little more serious. Sometimes it's like Kyle Baker, like really cartoonish and really funny. Sometimes. Like in the Justice League, when he was there, he was very taken very seriously. He was in All-Star Squadron for a bit. But he's Gail Simone's gonna have a series with him, which is really cool. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited. I really don't get too excited for titles, but I'm excited for a new Plastic Man. The other announcement that they made is there's gonna be a new Hawkman series by Venditti, and I can't remember the artist, but it's a big artist. But anyway, that one is going to be good too, because I've always been a Hawkman fan. But if you're a fan of Plastic Man, Volume 1 was the Golden Age, and he started off in Police Comics. And then the second series, which I own, ran from 1966 to 1968. And then when they revamped titles again in 1976 to 1977, they came back and they started with the original numbering again. And that's 20 issues, and I own all that. That was one of the first DCs that I actually went back and collected everything with because I wanted to have it. And then there's a 4-issue miniseries by Phil Fogolio and with artists Hilary Barton and Kevin Nolan, and that was really cool. This is one that I picked up off the shelf. The other one I had to go back and buy issues for. And then the fourth series is the Kyle Baker, a little cartoony, a little funny, good series. That one ran for 20 issues, and that's a lot of fun. I think that's it. I'd sure like to have had the Plastic Man. Oh, I don't own the Plastic Man special. Damn it. See, every time I find something, I always find something I'm missing. It's a bad idea. So the Plastic Man special I'm gonna have to add. And then the Hawkman series, like it's gonna be starting up soon. So they're taking advantage of characters that have started up in the DC Dark Metal series. And I did get all caught up in the New Age of Heroes stuff. You got Silencer, you got Sideways, you got the Terrifics. What was the other one? I'm missing one more. Oh, the Hulk character. I can't think of his name. Damage. It's a book about. It's not the Damage that we know from JSA. Or the Damage that had his own title that would explode shit. This is like a Hulk Damage. And if you look at it, these are fun. It's launching like new characters in the universe that are sort of loosely Marvel analogies. Like Sideways is Spider-Man. He's young. This is the best one, I think. I liked it because I like when comics focus on characterization, and I felt like after the first issue of it, I really knew the character. Sideways was a lot of fun. It's like a Spider-Man Peter Parker type character. Even though his power set totally different, this guy can open portals, and he's kind of like Spot in the Spider-Man villain. He opens up a portal and jumps right through. And he's got like a friend that's an amazing friend that like sewed his costume, and she's a twin sister to another, and they build her character up, and I really enjoyed it. And then they have Damage. Damage I enjoyed the least, but it's the closest to the Marvel character, the Hulk. They have a female character that's like Thunderbolt Ross, and she's like fighting Amanda Waller kind of thing, and she's the one that released Damage. And they have what is that guy's name? Colonel Thumbert. I can't remember his name, but he's got a mustache. They have a character get all armored up and fight Damage, very similar to that character. And this guy can only Hulk out like for an hour, but sort of like the Hulk when he originally came out, he could only turn to the Hulk at night when he was, gray. So yeah, he's been through every incarnation you can possibly think of. But still, it was a lot of fun. The art was in your face. I liked it. The Terrifics was like the Fantastic Four. Mr. Terrific, being all smart and all, he's kind of like Reed Richards. Plastic Man is like a dual role. He's like Reed Richards because he could stretch in the power base. And his attitude is like Johnny Storm. So there you go. Metamorpho is a monster like the Thing. He's not necessarily his power base is the same, but they're both monsters in people's eyes. They can't turn back. They're always looking to gain their humanity, Rex Mason. And then you got Phantom Girl, which isn't the Legion Phantom Girl, but maybe a great 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 grandmother to the Legion character. And she's like Sue Storm. She can, turn into visible and shit like that and phase through things. So sometimes it doesn't match, but in characterization, it's kind of like the Fantastic Four. I liked it a lot. It was really good. The art was fantastic. The JRJR book, The Silencer, but with Abnett, that was one of my favorites. That his art is so freaking amazing. I know people shit on his art, but goddamn, I don't know what they. Every time they do it, I want to do the Three Stooges to him, and like poke him in the eye and say, "What the fuck are you looking at? You don't like that art." Because I like JRJR. But it really, really cool comic book. And she's kind of like Lady Killer in my opinion. She has a family. She kind of goes out at night or does what she needs to do, but she's trying to get a normal life where she doesn't have to do it anymore. A little different than Lady Killer, because Lady Killer is kind of like, hey, I'll put my kids to sleep, put my husband away, and then I'll go commit murder. There was another book that was like that from Dynamite. Oh, man, what was it called? Like Red something. Ah, man, I can't remember. But very similar to that. Silencer, she's a badass. She's worked with Talia in the past. Talia's trying to warn her that somebody might come looking for her. And she has this weird power, which I don't really get, but she could turn things, she could bring things into her bubble of silence, and I don't know what advantage that really gives her. I'm sure they'll explore it and explain it as time goes on, and we'll learn exactly what that could do. I could see if your sound-based powers like Dazzler, and you could silence something, then you'd nullify her ability. But I don't see how it would, like, if you're just fighting somebody, how being in complete silence would be to your advantage or to his to the villain's disadvantage. But anyway, I'm gonna rank them because I'm all caught up. My favorite of the New Age of Heroes is Sideways. It just the characterization and stuff was just so. Was there a lot of adventure in it? No, but it. it established a lot and it linked into the event really well. It told you his origin story. You got to know his mother, his friends, his life, which he's adopted. So that's even more interesting. I really, really liked it. That was my top one. My number two, I'm gonna go with Silencer. I think the story's really intriguing. I like the situation, but I'm into those books. Man, I wish I can remember that other Dynamite book because it ran for a long time. It was like Lady Killer, but she would like drug her kids and stuff when she'd go out because she didn't want anybody finding out. It was crazy shit. Man, I wish my brain worked. The white dots sometimes. I might poke around with the title in the database with under Red. I want to say Red Sparrow, but that's a fucking movie that's out now. Not Red Agent. Maybe it was Black something. I don't know. I know it had a color in it. There's so many titles with red in it. I could search by publisher and hope I run across it by Dynamite, but Dynamite has a lot of shit. Let's find Fields publisher. Let's see, what the hell? I can't believe I'm going down this rabbit hole. Ah, screw it. So that was my second. My third one was the Terrifics. That one was more situational based. You got the personalities, but you don't really get the characters very well. You get a good situation that sets them up and what they need to do. And it introduces another character that I don't think has been in the DCU. He's been in the Wildstorm, America's Best Comics, but not the DCU, and that's Tom Strong. So that was my third, and that may change. I only read a one issue of that, just like Sideways. I read 2 issues of Silencer. I read 2 issues of Damage. The last one was Damage, not because it was bad. It just was. It didn't offer a lot of difference, in my opinion. It did have him fighting Suicide Squad. He kicked their fucking asses, but. Which I don't like when they do that, but it had Solomon Grundy, so it's got to be good. You got Solomon Grundy. But there you go. You got a lot more talk and than I thought I would do. So now I'm heading out to like almost 50 minutes. So thank you for the questions and comments, and I will get back. I will be back in probably a day or two and finish up the weekly reads. Bye. Hello and welcome back. And now we'll get into Mike M's weekly reads. It was a pretty doggone work good week for reads, not in quantity, but in quality. Let's see, we got 18, 19, 20 books. We got 9 Valiant, 1 Marvel, 3 Image, 5 Dynamite, and 2 DC. And this is for April 24th of 2017 to April 30th of 2017. And starting at the bottom, we go to the lowest score is a 4 out of 5. So I must have been in a really good mood, wanting to read, but not getting to read a lot, and everything was quenching the appetite. So we had Gold Key Alliance 1 through 5. This was the Gold Key characters, and it was kind of like the Crisis on Infinite Earths for Gold Key characters. So it's like a multiverse type situation for Gold Key. I really enjoyed it. It had a very strange ending, but if you like Crisis on Infinite Earths and want a little bit of a change up with different characters, try Gold Key Alliance. from Dynamite. The next one, 4 out of 5, was Divinity 3, Arrak, Son of the Revolution, number 1. Arrak helps Russia defend itself against the Deadside and Master Dark. Kosti, the Deathless Origin, is fantastic. That it was a cool origin story. Then we got Divinity number 3, Shadow Man and the Battle for Stalingrad. This is Shadow Man's part of the resistance, but overcome by Arrak and Bloodshot, and it's got a Baba Yaga origin. We then get into a Marvel, and this is Cloak and Dagger Mini. I was reading it from the trade paperback that looks like the books that the trades that I get, Epic Line, but it's not an Epic Line. This is the issue showed how much Cloak and Dagger need each other to survive. Cloak releases the guy who was poisoning a prescription. So this was guy that was actually taking prescription pills and putting poison in and killing people. Really dark when you think about it. Really dark situation. We have Savage Dragon 215 through 217. Savage Dragon gets his kids back from Dart. It's the first appearance of Aquaria. It's a backup. Dart kills Barry. A day in the life of the babies. And you got to remember that Eric Larson bought the rights to Ant, and he's starting to show Ant in Savage Dragon. Ant recruits Dragon from Spawn. And we got Legion of Superheroes, Volume 2, Number 298. Wildfire, Block, Invisible Kid, and Dawnstar investigate a murder. Element Lad, very upset of loss of running the team. So he was like head of the team at some point in this time frame. Colossal Boy is fucking Shrinking Violent, which really upsets Duplicate Boy. I can't believe I typed fucking in the notes. Ultra Boy, Phantom Girl, and Element Lad to the rescue, and it's soap opera goodness. I just said. Legion of Superheroes, Volume 2, 298. That was the last 4 out of 5. We get into the 5 out of 5. And we got Bloodshot number 0. Magic is pregnant. Other Bloodshot set free after the USA outbreak. A new organization forms out of Rising Spirit, Project Omen. Deathmate and Festival fly away and set free from Gate. So they escape from Gate. And Deathmate was the former Geomancer, and Festival was the FBI agent, if I remember correctly, that was tracking down Bloodshot. We have Divinity 3, Commander Bloodshot. Elseworlds Bloodshot in Russia goes after Magic, Kozel and Festival in Colorado Mountains, also Rampage, and Red. It has a Red Legend backup. We have Divinity 3, Stalinverse number 1 through 4. This is Mishka's new world by Russia. Ninjak tries to awaken Divinity, who is in an insane asylum. First Brigade, Kazmir and Mishka fight Abrams. Abrams convinces Kazmir of the universe and restores the world. Leaves Red Brigade intact. Abrams and Mishka are to now together, and you can see that leads to Divinity 4 and then to the other series that doesn't have Divinity in the name, but it's really should be. I don't think they should have changed it. Flash number 21. This is Johnny Thunder tries to escape an old folks home. Flash investigates Batcave, goes into Cosmic Treadmill with Batman, and finds Batman's Flashpoint father. This was the part of the button in Flash 21. We have Divinity number 3, the last 5 out of 5, Escape from Gulag. This is Archer in a prison sacrifices himself for Armstrong and the prison backup. Really cool. And man, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That might be a record. 8 5 out of 5s. How about that? So you've been listening to Mike M's Weekly Reads. You can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com on the emails. I am on the Twitter all the time at Mike Myers Brunch. You can send me questions at any time, and I will archive them off, and I will read them in a future episode. Thank you, Ronnie, and everybody that provided questions in this one. What else am I missing? Oh, I want to thank Nick for all of his questions. And one more thank you. I gotta remember who provided. Kirk Spencer provided a question about Atari Force. So thank you all for the questions. This helps keep it helps me think of things like to talk about. So I really appreciate them. And you could send me questions also on the Facebooks if you go to Geek Brunch Podcast and click the like button and follow the episode threads there. And this is located on geekbrunchpodcast.com. And I think that's about it. And I want to thank you for listening. If you get a chance, leave an iTunes review if you're on iTunes. If you're not on iTunes, send me feedback and let me know you like it. That'll take any time at all. You just send a tweet. If you don't use iTunes and you don't have to get it all configured to leave a comment, then just let me know you're out there and send me a tweet or an IM, and I will gladly read it. I'd be glad to get some feedback. So I'll talk to you later, and you guys have a good evening. Bye-bye, or morning, whatever.